In general, American society is quite silent on the subject of death. Filmmaker Dr. Michelle Petacola found that she was unprepared for the death of her parents. That experience led Petacola to begin a quest to understand death that led to her four-part documentary series, Secrets of Life and Death.
This is Mary Simon for Women's Magazine on KPFA at 94.1 FM. We are a nation obsessed with youth. The topic of death exposes the fragility of life, and even talking about it makes us uncomfortable. But avoiding the subject can make it harder when death touches our lives. Today's guest, Dr. Michelle Petacola, calls death an opportunity of profound importance, a chance to rediscover our essence, the nature of our being. For the last 8 years, Michelle has been working on a four-part documentary called The Secrets of Life and Death. The film tells her story and that of others in an effort to help understand and prepare for the end-of-life experience. Since 1984, Michelle has been studying with a Sufi master from Baghdad and for 10 years served as his media director. She currently teaches seminars on death at John F. Kennedy University and leads a partner loss support group for a local hospice. Thank you for joining me, Michelle.
Thank you.
Michelle, this is obviously a very personal project. Can you explain what made you want to tackle such a difficult subject?
Well, I had been working in video, and I had the feeling that I wanted to do a documentary, but I didn't know what I wanted to do because when you do a documentary, it takes a long time. And then my parents died. They died within 6 months of each other, and I was so stunned, so amazed by the intensity of the experience that I thought, this is the topic. And not only because it was intense, but because I really felt unprepared. I felt like my culture, my society had let me down, that there was this incredible, important event that we all go through that we don't have any preparation for. I wanted to help other people so they didn't have to go through what I had gone through, which was, well, I made mistakes. I made choices that were based on ignorance. So that was the main reason.
Are there things specific to the American culture that makes us reluctant to talk about death?
The consumer society is really not compatible with death. I think death makes us treat life in a different way, as not about acquisition, because A, you can't take any of that stuff with you, and B, it makes you think about the finite amount of time you have and what you're here for, or what maybe your purpose is. And that's very different from what our culture really emphasizes, which is buy things and accumulate things and accomplish things that have to do with, oh, I'm an important person, look at what I did. Death really puts you back into what's really important, and what's really important is relationships. And you don't need to buy things to have relationships.
Were there certain cultures you looked to during your work that handled this topic better?
I was trying to look in our culture for people that were handling it to get guidance from. What I found was that Buddhism is a really good culture that has a very strong presence in our culture now for handling death. And a lot of the people that I interviewed ended up either being, well, having a background in Buddhism or actually being Buddhist. So I feel like they do have a very good culture for handling death or a good take on it.
So how do you think we can change?
I think by talking about it, I think it's a step in the right direction and becoming more comfortable with expressing what we're feeling. The other part of it is learning how to be present. I guess that's also the Buddhist culture, is learning how to be present, how to show up and be in the moment. And I think our culture, we tend to think about the future or fears about the past. And so we spend a lot of time in the future of the past, but death puts us in the present.
Do men and women deal with death differently?
I don't have a large sample to go by, but I have some feelings for it. Certainly women, because of our culture, are more comfortable in the helping position, that is, caregiving and helping people. Women are also more open, on the whole, to discussions about death. You know, in hospice support groups, women are much more represented there than men are. They're more used to or allowed in our culture to be aware of and express their feelings, whereas in our culture, men are not expected to or not encouraged to get in touch with their feelings. And that puts them at a disadvantage in dealing with death. On the other hand, when it comes to dying, the people that I found who were willing to talk about their experience were men. And it was interesting because somehow they were able to see their choice of being interviewed as an act of courage and an act of helping other people and sharing that. And I found women reticent to do that, to expose that. My sense was that they were never ready. I don't know that for them dying, that they could see that as a heroic act, dying. Caregiving is a heroic act for women, but maybe for men they can see death as a heroic act. As a heroic event.
You talk about the gifts of death. What do you mean by that?
There are a lot of gifts. I think one of the gifts is in learning more about ourselves, whether that's you yourself who's dying and so really learning what's important in your life, or accompanying somebody who's dying and, again, learning what's important in life. Any way in which you relate to death, if you really open to that experience, there are surprises there. There are lessons that can be learned from doing that because death is this incredible event that's part of who we are. It's that step into the next phase, whatever that is. And it's essential to who we are.
What was one of those lessons either that you learned or that one of the people in your film?
Oh, I learned so many lessons.
Will you share one?
Yeah. For some reason, the one that's coming up for me right now is the lesson about forgiveness and acceptance. When I was dealing with my parents dying, I felt I made a lot of mistakes. When my father died, I did not go back to see the body, for example. My mother had called me the morning that she thought he was going to die, and I don't know, I just got the feeling that that wasn't going to happen that day. You know how it is, maybe you don't, with death, where each day you think this is going to be it, this is going to be it, and then finally you kind of get tired of waiting. I mean, it can go a long time, and so I didn't go back. So I didn't see him that last time, and then I didn't afterwards, when they called me and said that he had died, I didn't take the long two-hour drive to go back because I didn't think it was important. So I had regrets about that. And then the same with my mother. I had seen her maybe 3 weeks before she died. But then when she actually went into coma, I didn't jump on a plane and go back. I thought, well, you know, it'll probably be okay, or I've seen her. And yet from my experience of talking to different people, I think it's important to see the dead body, to really get that that person is not in their body anymore. I think it's part of, helps the grieving process and the letting go. So I had these attitudes about myself or feelings about myself of having kind of messed up. That's where the forgiveness comes in. In the second film on caregiving, people talk about the things that they did. And I thought they did a great job of their caregiving. And yet all of them experienced at some point regret. And one of the people said, you know, it really doesn't matter what you do when somebody's dying. It's really their experience of dying. And you can't mess it up. You're not that powerful. You really can't do anything wrong. And that was really powerful for me. It was like, oh, I didn't mess up their death. I mean, yeah, there are some things that maybe in the future I might do differently. But I didn't mess up their death. They had the death that was right for them. So that was a powerful lesson. And I think a lot of people, because I work in a hospice support group, that's an issue for people after that somebody dies is, oh, I should have done this. I should have done that.
It seems the process of making these films helped you let yourself off the hook.
Oh, yes. Yes, the process of doing the film was a process of healing my grief. I think we all have these ideas about how a good death is supposed to be. And that was the other lesson I gained from doing this film, and that is that everybody has to have their own death. And so maybe you have all these ideas about holistic health and healing processes and, I don't know, reading Tibetan Book of the Dead or all that. you can't impose your ideas about what death should be on somebody who's dying. You have to really be there for them. You have to accept and support what they need.
This is KPFA's Women's Magazine. I'm talking with Dr. Michelle Petacola, producer, director of the documentary Secrets of Life and Death. How did your experience of being a caregiver change your perspective?
I think there are two things that you have to keep in mind when you're a caregiver. One is being present for the person who's dying. It is really hearing what they're saying and allowing them the space to say what they feel, encouraging them. The other part is being present for yourself and being aware of when it is time for you to take a break, realizing when it's too much, and being kind to yourself and giving yourself what you need.
My 14-year-old dog has cancer, and I'll find myself crying, and through the tears, there's this overwhelming joy. It's hard to explain, but it's this joy for having this time to be with her, but also this sadness that I'm going to be losing her.
I experienced something similar when my mother died, the euphoric aspect. I don't know whether there's something intoxicating in tears itself that do that. But part of it for me was realizing that this moment, this here and now, was more important, that took precedence over anything else. Nothing else was as important as the loss of my mother. There's something special about that. And then the other aspect is life in that time of grieving, in that time of somebody dying, is very precious. And it's also very magical. And so I think it's very unlike everyday life and special in that way. I think that also blends with or adds to the euphoric aspect of it. It's a very special time. I talked to this one woman who is what you call a death midwife, and she says that probably most times very magical things happen around the death event. And not to worry too much about how to deal with things, because people will magically show up. Times will magically synchronize. And so I think that's what's special also about death, is it's so unlike everyday life. It's what life really should be about. It's almost like a meditation. It's so real. It's so present. It's so in touch with the most important thing about what it is to be a human being and what it is to be alive. It's not caught up with the trivial.
What do you hope the film can add to the dialogue about death?
Well, actually, I'm hoping it will encourage the dialogue. I don't think that in any way my films do more than scratch the surface. Yet I think they also encourage people to talk. The reason I had put myself in the film was that I wanted to give the difficult side, the person who was not dealing with it so well, to encourage other people to talk about that, the problems they've had, instead of just having these people who do a good job, and then we say, oh, yeah, well, that was good for them, but what about me? So I wanted to show both sides of that. And I think that does help people to talk about their experience.
For those of us who have aging parents, for example, are there discussions you feel that we should be having with them, or ways that we can prepare together?
Oh, definitely. Sometimes it's hard to bring up the topic because it's not something that we bring up. So something like, oh, I saw this movie and it got me thinking. And what do you think? How do you want to have your death? Or what do you want after you died? And so you ask questions like, how do you want us to deal with your body? Do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be buried? What are your plans on that? Have you made plans? Durable power of attorney. That is, who is going to take care of your medical issues if, say, you become unable to answer or make those decisions yourself? Do you have a will? You want to make sure that your parents have taken care of, and probably they have. At least I found that the older generation is pretty good about that. But actually, discussing those things is something that they're not used to. So you make sure that the basic things are taken care of, and then maybe move into other things about, well, What do you think happens after you die? What are your beliefs about that? That's a good question. And maybe you've shared certain things of the same religious upbringing, so you have some ideas about maybe what they've been exposed to, but what do they really believe? Have they really thought about that?
Yeah, I recently started having some dialogue with my mother, and she told me she didn't want to donate her organs, and it's just something I didn't know. I was surprised.
That whole organ donor question is a tricky one, because if you do donate your organs, the medical personnel have to come running in and grabbing the body out and removing the organs pretty quickly in order for them to maintain their integrity. And yet, I believe that there's something sacred about that moment of death and that space afterwards. And I think it would be pretty unnerving for the people who care about you, if you're the one who's dying, or yourself, if you were there with your parents, to have to suddenly vacate the premises because they're running in and grabbing your loved one to harvest organs. You can see I have some mixed feelings. On the one hand, I think it's really great if we enable people who need our organs to have a second chance. But on the other hand, we have to balance what feels right for us.
I hadn't thought about the other side. What are your hopes for your end of life?
Well, I guess I would like to not have to linger a long time. I would also like to have enough time to complete all my relationships. And so I don't know that I would want to have that sudden death, because I think that's very hard. I mean, it's great for the person who dies because, you know, you don't have to suffer or at least not for very long. But for the people who are left behind, that's very, very difficult. It's one of the hardest things to adjust to. So it would be nice to have some time. I would like to be conscious. I'd like to have my faculties so that I can dialogue and share my experiences with people, with my loved ones, with the people I care about.
And that was something you weren't able to have with your mother?
Well, in a way, yes. It's just that I had expectations, see, about how I would like to have the dialogue. Actually, I had the dialogue that we needed, which was, well, what are your favorite memories? What a perfect thing to ask is, talk about your life. What was good in your life? And that's what she talked about. And that's one of the things that I guess people who have studied the process of dying really encourage is what they call the life review, is giving people the opportunity to reflect on what their life was about and what they remember is the good times.
Holidays are an especially difficult time to deal with loss. Any recommendations?
Well, don't ignore it. That is, be proactive. Think about how you're going to spend the holiday. Don't let it just fall on you. Some people find that it's helpful to go away, especially if it's within the first year of having lost somebody in your home, is to go away, to do something different. Because if you do the same thing, then the loss of that person might be more than you can handle. Or if you are going to do the same things, bring the dead one to the event. That is, don't treat that lost person like the ignored big elephant in the living room, but invite them in. Maybe set a place setting for them at the table. Talk about how they would have handled that event or remember stories about that person.
Wonderful suggestion. So, Michelle, at this point you have finished parts 1 and 2, which are facing death and caring for the dying, and parts 3 and 4, which are grieving the dead and making life out of death, will be available in 2008?
I hope so.
You've obviously put a lot of yourself into this project. Thank you, Michelle. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you, Mary. I really appreciated it. I really enjoyed it.
I'm Mary Simon with Women's Magazine here at KPFA. I've been talking with producer-director Dr. Michelle Petacola about her documentary series, Secrets of Life and Death.
I can't predict the future. All I have really is right now. That's all I have is this very moment. I don't even have moments 3 hours from now. You know, it's like stealing from time. This is it. This is as good as it gets right here, right now. We must be willing to let go of the life we have planned so as to have the life that is waiting for us. And that's, you know, really what it's about.
That was a clip from Part 1, Facing Death. You can see Part 2, Caring for the Dying, The Art of Being Present, on March 3, 2008, from 7 to 9 p.m., at the Kensington Library at 61 Arlington Avenue. For more information about the four-part documentary, The Secrets of Life and Death, visit secretsoflifeanddeath.com. On the site, you can find Michelle's email address and sign up to get notified about future screenings.
That was Remember When by Elise Lebeque. The piece opened with Possible Dream, also by Lebeque. Her music is featured in the film Secrets of Life and Death.
Before